Hello and welcome to Game Changers. So I am super lucky today. I have got two people with me who have already made an appearance on Game Changers, and they've so nicely said they'll come back if we came back. Oh my gosh. So Jamie is here and Kirsty is here. Thank you so much for coming back, you crazy cats.
Hello.
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 So as always, let's do a quick introduction. So if anyone hasn't listened to your prior episodes, they know who the heck is talking. Jamie, do you want to give me a quick idea about who you are and why you're here?
Sure. I'm Jamie Nicholas. I am an associate lecturer here at Staffordshire University. And my research is mainly into queer things in games.
Queer things, I love
queer
that.
Queer things.
Things,
in
stuff
general,
and the, bits.
It's like a clump of things.
Oh, wouldn't that be brilliant? That could be your title.
My clump of
lecturing
gay stuff.
Lecturing
yes.
Gay clump.
Gay, the gay clump.
The gay clump. Wonderful.
I have to write that paper now.
Next. Kirsty, give us an idea about you.
I'm Kirsty. I'm one of the concept art lecturers at Staffordshire University, and I'm kind of adjacent to Jamie, so it's queer, but like with a focus on like non-binary stuff. I quite like to focus on gender or lack thereof.
Fabulous. So that ties into, if I cast my mind back, Jamie, our first conversation on here, where we're talking about getting different voices at the table, and we've got different voices at the table.
Wonderful.
Look at us doing the thing. So this was a request from you guys, and I'm going to be led by you. We're going to talk about sex. And Jamie, you can't sing the song, but we all know what song is going through our heads
yes.
right now.
Yes. So, anyone who was raised from 2000 onwards.
Or
absolutely.
In the 90s onwards.
Or in the 90s. Sorry, I can't. It was an old video when I saw it. So.
Okay. I'm going to use the term that I have just alighted on. Crypt Keeper. That's me in this conversation. Oh my gosh. So sex. Oh. So thinking about representation and gender, and we've got voices at the table, which I think is incredibly important. The idea of sex in game and it being kind of one of those moral panics. We're familiar with the kind of moral panic. Oh my goodness. Is it called Coffeegate? The idea that something is going to seep into this media and corrupt everyone. Sex in video games is something that people kind of think quite a lot about in terms of it's a negative thing, I think. I don't mean they sit there and like just think about sex in video games.
I mean, I think we should prefix this conversation by starting with sex and everything. As every media form that I can think of has sex in it.
Oh, it does. But this is the newest one.
This is the newest one.
And therefore everyone panics about it. Like
yes.
we've done sex in film. We've done sex, you know, we've...
Yes.
It's that working through thing, isn't it? If that makes sense. Like, okay, so we've got over that hurdle. That's fine. All right.
We'll move on to the next
thing. We'll move
on
to this new thing.
No one's paying attention to the old thing.
Yes.
Let's talk about the next thing.
Absolutely.
But perhaps the reason that we're so worried about it is because this is one of the types of sex you can actually participate in because you're involved in the sex. Whereas with a film, you're watching and it's more of like a voyeurism. But with games, sometimes it's your character that you've created, so it feels like you are participating. And so you're having sex.
I was going to say something similar, not as well put as that. But there's one of the original stories about like the sex in games panic was the Mass Effect series, where I think there was news stories where the headline was, this game lets you have sex with like blue aliens and stuff like that.
Okay.
And that was you can in the game. I think this brings us to like one of the things that the conversations around sex and the actual like act of, well, the seeing of sex in media, it does sort of raise questions about like society. So like, I'm not going to talk about aliens particularly because I'm going to sound very weird if I do a 20-minute bit on sex with aliens.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about it like instead like how like, for example, queerness and sort of kink-based sex appeared in like media. It's been appearing in media for ages actually. I can't point to somewhere where I'm like, that's the first time I've seen it, but I know I've seen it in like sort of 2000s onwards, like TV and film.
Oh,
and
oh,
I think that
as the crypt keeper, I can take you back.
It's been around for a while, right?
I can take you back to at least, probably before, but I can take you back to the late 70s. And
but one of the things
very
that,
clearly there,
yeah, one of the things that putting those kind of subjects in film and TV does is it puts it into the common marketplace of conversations.
It does, yeah.
Because it's now a thing that we could bring up. Like, I wouldn't just walk into a room and be like, hey guys, let's talk about leather, because that would go wrong. But I could say, like, hey guys, did any of you see, like, the latest video game? Like, did you see the outfits that one character was wearing? Like, what do we think about that? And that's, it's a more open way of talking about it, because it's more open, literally, because more people have seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And feel however they feel about it, and yeah, are interested or not interested, and it opens up the conversation.
Yeah.
What do you think, Kirsty, in terms of like that idea of just opening a conversation, because it's such a prevalent media form?
Yeah, I think it's a really good way to sort of step into to talking about it, because I definitely remember talking like about movies a lot of the time, where they have some weird things like Alien, for instance, and that leads it sort of way into talking about Geiger, and Geiger obviously his influence with sex and sort of like the female anatomy influenced the film a lot, and eventually you get to those topics. And I think a good example in games is like Baldur's Gate 3. There's a scene in it where you can romance one of the characters who's also an alien, but she's very like stern and she's very serious, and then she dominates you. And it's just a really nice way of looking at this character who is like a dominatrix. Mm-hmm. And it becomes like part of her personality. So you can talk about her, and you can talk about that sort of like aspect of, I suppose she dominates you, whether you're a male, female, or genderless character.
Okay.
So it's like this dominatrix sort of subject that you can bring up like at the dinner table with friends and family who play games, which is interesting. It's not something you could just bring up out of nowhere.
I can't remember. It's a really good point. I can't remember. What was her name again?
Lazelle,
and she's a
Githyanki.
Yes, I forgot the names then. But yeah, the Githyanki throughout the game is shown to have this like really strong warrior culture. It's very much like survival of the fittest. Like they have their children fight to the death in some cases.
Oh, it's Sparta.
It's Sparta. But sort of set in like the astral realm. It's really magically Sparta. And with that kind of like, I think you can see a sort of link between that sort of like connection between like strength and survival of the fittest with that style of sex, right? Because there is that kind of thing where like that kind of aggressiveness and that kind of feeling is going to maybe transfer over into how that culture views sex and reproduction.
Exactly.
Maybe.
I think it's a great way at seeing how her character works, and I think Baldur's Gate has been great at doing that, just in terms of each romance scene or sex scene with the characters tells you so much more about the characters. And Lazelle's a perfect one, because later, as you progress her romance, spoilers, she softens up because she gets to change and become more like your character, or alternatively she doesn't soften up and she's a bit more strict and harsh, more like her original self, and then the scenes of romance reflect that.
So there's a narrative impetus to these elements being included, so it's not just there for, oh, there's sex in the game, oh, there's an element where there's a narrative purpose. Does that change it, do you think?
Oh, definitely, because Baldur's Gate's like one example, but there's Dragon Age, Mass Effect, there's so many games that do it. And I think when you compare that to like when video games and consoles first came out, like Atari had like straight up just pornography that was like, it had no game sense, it had no character, and it was just sex for the sake of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now we're playing games and they have sex scenes, but it's like reading a book where you're sort of like the player and you're the main character, and so you're falling in love and you're getting these glimpses into the story, and that's probably why the sex is so important.
Yeah, because we're revolving our character, and therefore you're revolving your presence within the game, and it's developing.
Yeah,
super interesting.
I think Kirsty makes a really good point here, and I'm going to bring it back to Baldur's Gate for a second just to reinforce that point. Is that sex can be used for more than just sex. Sex is often used as a narrative point in stories and things like that. It's a big part of people's narratives. It can represent the coupling of two people. It can represent two people falling in love sometimes, if that's how they view a sort of their traditional sort of relationship. I'm very thinking of Bridgerton currently. It's a lovely third season if anyone's not seen it yet.
Very heavy on consent, I hear.
It is. Yeah.
Very heavy on consent.
Very good.
Thank you. I don't watch it. I just...
I meant Bridgerton.
Oh, I
you're
you
doing
meant me.
Great too, Sharon.
Thanks.
But no, there's aspects of, so like, for example, one of the characters I ended up romancing, and I'm very upset that I'm going to be admitting this on air on a podcast, was Gale, was the wizard character, who he's a bit of a wet wipe.
Oh, okay.
And a good chunk of his character is him being caught up in his ex, who is the goddess of magic, which is a pretty high bar to follow.
It is, yeah.
Unmanaged, but pretty difficult bar to follow. And a lot of his romantic scenes and his sexual scenes involve magic.
Okay.
And there are points in the game where you can turn around and go, why don't we just do this like flesh and blood, buddy? Like we don't always have to be whipping out the spell book for every time we want to get our pants off. Let's just, you know, keep it between. And there's a way that you can have that conversation as a player with Gale, and it becomes part of his wider narrative.
But that's, again, like, that's a super, and I'm going to refer back to a different, it's not a game, but I'll refer back to a TV show called Billions, if either of you have ever seen that. There's a character in it who is a sub, and his sort of sexual being is being submissive, and this like impacts his relationship with his wife, who's the Dom, and this idea of this is the only way he can move forward with sex is if this happens. And it's really interesting that you're kind of pulling out something from Baldur's Gate, that idea of there's this element to the sexual relationship, but can we do it in a different way? Can we explore something that's maybe like not in your immediate wheelhouse, that isn't something that you're completely comfortable with, and you can kind of evolve and kind of explore through that, and I think that's super interesting.
I think when you do things like that, you sort of evolve, well, you re-evolve the meaning of sex, because I think a lot of things, and especially gay male culture, my culture, which I'll talk about in a second, we've taken sex and we've turned it into more of a commodity, like a thing that, like, you'd go out for a night out and for a vodka and a sex because like a lot of what happened in like cruising communities back in the day is what's reflected in current communities now. So like the early days of like queer communities forming, where it would be a few guys who would meet up in a back alley, or a few guys who would meet up in a bathroom. I'm not sanitizing. This is how it started, or in an underground bar,
or
a club. It was all very, very quick and done, and then back to home, and a lot of times back to the wife.
Yes, of course.
And that is reflected in things like Grindr. Like, there's no sugarcoating it. That is the same kind of culture that we have in things like Grindr and like the casualization of sex. Yeah. And for some people, that is the kind of sex that works for them.
Absolutely.
That's great. That's wonderful. It's not the kind of sex that works for everyone.
No.
Yeah? So I think by doing what Kirsty's pointed out and actually building sex as a narrative piece, you kind of re-add that into, like, that sort of, this is important element to sex, which I believe is important, because when you're exploring sex and when you're showing it off in a game, I think it should have a purpose. I sometimes get the idea of like wanting a bit of like voyeurism in a game where my character went and
did this
way funny.
Yeah.
Fine. Like, sure, if that's an element of games you enjoy, great, cool. But I do think sex should have a purpose.
Yes, I agree.
Wonderful. End of the podcast.
And Jamie, we're done. It's been amazing. Thanks.
Jamie's made a good point. We can wrap it up there.
I have a lot of points I want to like talk about based on what you said, and there's so many different ones that I don't even know where to start. So you mentioned like the sort of the gay culture and how that's affected, specifically gay male culture, but I have a lot of like that sort of perception as a bisexual person, and bisexuality in media as a whole, you're always promiscuous, especially if you're a woman. So like I think most media hasn't represented bisexual or pansexual non-binary people. I don't think that exists. Maybe it does, but I haven't seen it. But female sort of bisexual people are always considered promiscuous. They are always looking to cheat. They want orgies. That's their thing. And then male sort of bisexual people are always considered gay, pretending to be straight. Usually that's what I've sort of like seen. And recently, a lot of games, again, Baldur's Gate, have been really good at changing that narrative by making like the characters player sexual. So they're attracted to your character and not necessarily bi, straight, queer. I mean, some of them have like sort of canonized sexualities, like Astarion mentions that he's dated men before. And I think Karlach mentions that she's been with women before. And so they're definitely queer regardless. But when it comes to like looking at Karlach, for instance, as a sort of bisexual option, she's this big sort of like huge tiefling and a warrior, a barbarian. Barbarian?
Barbarian, yes.
Barbarian. So she fits this sort of butch aesthetic that you would expect as a stereotype. But then she can date men or women or non-binary people. And she's just really feminine and flirty and sweet and kind. And so she doesn't fit that she's promiscuous stereotype. She's also very much monogamous because Baldur's Gate explores not just sex, but polyamorous sex and monogamy within the game. And you have that option to be non-monogamous. And some characters like it and some don't. And it's really nice to see characters that are canonically queer as women and still interested in being monogamous, which is something bisexual and queer women haven't had the chance to be represented in a lot of the time.
So I'm really interested in that idea of the representation, because obviously where Jamie's coming from with gay male, kind of that, again, it's a historical kind of, can I call it a hangover?
Yes.
An approach and a perception and a stereotype.
Progress whoopsie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which sort of still pervades within the community itself.
So yes.
There's, if I may be so bold, there's that idea of...
It does.
You know, monogamy maybe, well, that's not really... That's, you know, sort of to the side.
And
that's
also,
not...
also things like classic male... And I'm going to talk about Karlach in this one as well. A lot of things to do with, like, classic male aggression transferring directly into sex.
Yeah.
The early on, but my introductions to things like gay sex, very aggressive.
Yeah.
Very aggressive, almost sort of animalistic, because that's how it was portrayed in the kinds of things that I found gay sex in.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time that's, again, gets reflected in the conversations that have get had around it. And one of the best examples I can describe of how that, like, that separation from, like, aggression and sexual behaviour is Karlach, the character we were just talking about. Because, yes, she is a barbarian, and their whole class structure is based around this whole thing of being angry and raging and taking an axe to anything they don't like, and Karlach has that aspect to her. She has rage. Good for her.
I can complete. I'm there.
I get it. I get it. But she's
even
also
Kirst is nodding.
She's also got this wonderful soft side to her. Like she's tender and she's caring and she's loving, and that gets reflected in the sexual scenes as well. And it removes the idea that the presentation we have with things like our bodies and personalities and roles can be completely removed when things get, you know, go into the bedroom, so to speak.
Or even just into the intimate. It doesn't have to be the bed. It can be just that intimate, getting to know someone better, taking it from just being able to talk to someone to talking about important things and finding a centre. I was going to ask, like, where I was going with that was, what's the kind of, in your opinion, in terms of like the placement of these characters, what's the stereotype? Is it what you've been talking about, or is it sort of just there's that stereotype, and it's not really explored in any way, shape or form, because that's how it needs to be presented for people to, yes, put someone in a... I'm going to use the word box again. It's all I ever talk about, to put someone in that box that people feel then comfortable with.
Is that, to clarify, specifically bisexual people?
Bisexual, or obviously you talk about female gender as well. So that idea of kind of... You were talking about that character and you're saying presents very kind of... Butch, I think you used the term butch. I don't want to use incorrect terms, but I like butch. So is that kind of a tradition? Is it you're very feminine or you're very butch and that's you in the game and that's all we can do?
From experience, I would say that, yeah, a lot of women or female presenting characters are often presented as either very, very butch or very, very femme. These are more sort of like lesbian terms, but they do kind of like fall within the sort of bisexual community and queer pan. The problem being that sometimes bi and pansexual women aren't very liked in the lesbian community. Because there's historically this idea that bisexual people want to cheat, because why would you want to be attracted to multiple people and multiple genders if you don't want to have everything at once? And there's kind of this sort of history where there's a confusion between being sort of interested in multiple genders or just being polyamorous, and not that either of those are issues, but they kind of get mixed up a lot all the time, and so there is a stereotype that bi people want to cheat a lot, which, I mean, you're in the queer community, Jamie, you've surely heard this stereotype.
I think a lot of it obviously happens a lot more in certain communities, but queer people as a whole can sometimes be sort of characterised as sex-crazed maniacs, where sex is our first and only thought. And honestly, it is a problem, because we tend to forget that lots of people want lots of different things out of relationships. Some people do just want sex, and that's perfectly fine. People might only want sex with one person. That's perfectly fine. They might want to have sex with multiple people but be dating one person. They might want to be dating multiple people. Human beings are a spectrum. I'm quite happy for them to get on with it. Because the conversations around queer people are always around sex, a lot of the time that is where the conversations go.
But if we look at kind of the way stuff is represented, and it's kind of how we started this conversation, was stuff is tackled in a media, people get worked up about it, then they forget about it, then it comes a new media, and then people get worked up about it, and then people go, actually, that's fine, no worries. And then we're on a new media and people get concerned and think about all this. But as Kirsty pointed out, it's because perhaps, and we can come back to this, it's an interactive form. You're not a voyeur. Your decisions have consequences in terms of the relationships you build in the game.
Yeah, I think it's really important for role-playing games, which is probably where I think sex scenes feature the most. I could be wrong. There's definitely games that have like sex in the background, like God of War has sex in the background. But it's mostly when there's a sex scene, it's usually you're doing the scene, or you've walked into it and you're seeing someone participating, like your character walks into someone having an affair, example.
Okay. Yeah. But again, a narratively pertinent.
Yeah. It's all very something that's relative. There's a scene in the Mass Effect games, the first Mass Effect game, which was again one of the early games where you could have sex in a video game, and there is three potential romance options in the first game: Ashley, Caden, and Liara Tassoni. Now, Ashley and Caden are humans, and Liara is an alien. Ashley's a woman, Caden's a man, and Liara is often defined as a woman, but she is non-binary, so her species don't have any gender. Okay. And she tells you this at one point. She's like, we're monogendered. We all present female, but we can have kids with anyone. We're just aliens. We don't exist within your sort of norms. And if you play it as a female shepherd, and you get to be a bit cheeky, you get to romance both of them for a while, just to see who you like. And I'm
like,
not
that.
I'm not saying I did.
I just like the way you go, you need to be cheeky and do that.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, you've got to see what's out there. And Caden was lovely, and Liara was lovely. And then if you lead them both on long enough without committing to one, they kind of confront you. And you're in the middle of this room, and they're like, oh, I thought you wanted me, I thought you wanted me. But there's a line that Caden says of your female shepherd that is, I didn't even know you were interested in women. And he kind of sounds a little disgusted.
Yeah.
And it's this idea of you being a bisexual character in the future. And he's like judging you. And it's like, firstly, I think even Liara jumps in. She goes, firstly, I'm not a woman. I'm an alien. So get your facts straight. And then secondly, it's like, really? We're doing this now? So somehow teenage me felt shamed, and I was like, you're right, Caden, I can't be with the alien, I must be with you.
Okay.
And I kind of stayed with him and did his sort of narrative. And then, like, again, spoilers, he dumps you in the second game anyway, and you run off with an alien, so, like, if you want to. But he's just such an interesting character for all that, to then have him come out as bisexual in the third game.
Yeah, this is what I'm giggling about in the corner.
So, like, he literally...
I have no clue. I'm just like, oh, he's laughing.
He literally falls in love with a male shepherd throughout the series of all three games and realises he's bi or queer through you. But all of that happens after he spends the first game judging you for being interested in either romance. And having played both romances, the Caden romance in the first game is much more... Mass Effect 1 was very fade to black, but it's much more hands and arms around and kisses, whereas the Liara one, at least for a female shepherd, feels very like over sexualized, because
okay.
It's like it's the exotic, she's an alien, so like she's like, let me go into your mind. So it almost feels like her being an alien and going into your mind is more sort of, I guess, not perverse, but...
risque.
Yeah, it's more risque because she can sort of penetrate a part of you that physically can't be.
It's more intimate, maybe,
yeah.
As well. I mean, you know, like...
I was actually going to...
That's where you are. It, like, that's... You can there is a... You can disconnect, but that's all you.
Yeah.
Is in your mind. That's every part of you is there, and that character. Can I just ask, before you kind of jump in, can
yeah.
I just ask one thing? Because it was something that I found really, really interesting, if you don't mind me asking. Is that okay?
Yeah,
like,
go for it.
Everything's interesting, but this was just really... Because part of this podcast is kind of representation and kind of finding yourself in game or in the industry or like wherever, whatever we're talking about that day. We're talking about sex today. But you said, and kind of, yeah. And I'm just really interested in this because people do get very kind of involved in video games and they do feel a pressure or they do feel a part of what's happening. And what you said was teenage you went, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
that
completely.
I shouldn't be even thinking such things.
Yeah.
I'm just, do you mind me asking? Because because part of this and something that came up in the podcast I did with Jamie a bit ago was that idea of being seen and kind of like, you know, someone goes, oh, that's how I felt. Or that... Tell me.
Yeah, so like I pretty much knew I was queer very, very young. Like I remember of all the things, every time I tell people this, they're like, of all the things that made you realize it's this, I watched the movie Dodgeball with Vince Vaughn, which is a ridiculous comedy movie, and they get it wrong. They actually describe polyamory, but like I saw it as a child and I was like maybe 8 years old. I was like, that's the one. I will add that my dad shouldn't have let me watch Dodgeball at 8 years old. But Vince Vaughn has a love interest all the way through the film. And at the very end, because she's quite sort of masculine, sporty and considered butch, they just assume she's a lesbian and call her a lesbian throughout the film. And then at the end, she goes up and kisses her girlfriend. And a guy grabs Vince Vaughn and says, told you she was a lesbian. And then she goes and kisses Vince Vaughn's character and says, actually, I'm bisexual. And they have a little frupple at the end. And I just remember watching that and I was like, oh, she gets to kiss the girl and the guy. And I was like, that's the one. That's got to be the best outcome. And I remember telling people about this and everyone was like, you keep that to yourself now.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, okay, so you're not allowed to talk about that.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a very religious household as well. So I was like, you very much, it's just a passing fantasy, it's nothing, it doesn't matter. And then I kind of started playing games, and I remember, like, in a lot of video games in the early 2000s, you couldn't pick a gender right away, so you often had to play as a male character. Mm. And so the male characters would get to have female partners, and it was suddenly like, hey, I'm dating women, but nobody knows.
Okay.
Because I'm playing a man, so it doesn't count.
Yeah.
So I get to marry women and run off of them. And then when anybody looks at me, it's like, oh, the character's
it's
a guy.
It's the game.
Yes, and it's not my fault. And then I think Fable 2 came out, where you could pick your gender, which is a wonderful game. And it actually has bisexual representation, with Reaver, as played by Stephen Fry, as a bi male. And he's a wonderful character, a sort of villain hero, very great. Wonderful representation, but a horrible person. So
okay.
Like, we don't want to be associated with him as a human, but as a gay character or a queer character, he's wonderful. In that game, you get to marry anyone, woman or man.
Mm-hmm.
And you also get to partake in prostitution, which is a fade to black screen, and then unfades to black. So there's lots of sex within the game, and it's kind of like that British culture cheeky oi oi type of thing.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
it's very much a British video game where it's tongue in cheek.
Okay.
And I remember playing that and sort of wanting to romance female characters in it and being like, no, maybe not, maybe because I'm a woman now and that's not allowed. And I think it was probably Mass Effect that really made me start going, I could play it again, because they encourage you to make so many choices that you're
yeah.
encouraged to play the game again.
Of course.
And like, I'll play it again, but I'll play it as a guy this time. And I think I was quote unquote straight in every game up until Dragon Age. And Dragon Age Origins has a female character who is a religious character, and she's bisexual, and you can romance her, and she's just like not over sexualized in any regard. She's flirty, she's sweet, she will romance you male or female, and like, it just feels like a very natural romance. And I think that was around the time I was just like, you know what, the hell with being pretend straight. I probably came out not long after that,
yeah.
realistically, when I played Dragon Age games. And then after that, I'd say it's only in the past 5 to 7 years, I'd say I realised I was non-binary. And when I realised, games weren't at that stage yet either.
Okay,
so
yeah.
You couldn't pick your pronouns in games, you couldn't pick gender or anything. Recent ones have come out, though, like Starfield and Baldur's Gate. When you start the game, it'll ask you your pronouns. And Baldur's Gate's especially good for it because you can customize your appearance, so you can even make your character intersex, where you can have like predominantly male or female body upper half, and then different genitals to whatever you prefer. And it doesn't affect your sex scene in any way. It doesn't affect your romance. It affects nothing, but it just makes you feel like you can be whoever you want to be. And I think just seeing pronouns in games at the moment is a really nice way to make people feel like they can be whoever they are. So games are, to sort of wind all the way back.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, games are a really good way of sort of dipping your toe in the water and seeing who you are and playing out those sort of scenarios. And I think even with Mass Effect judging you, with Caden judging you in Mass Effect, there's other sort of games like Dragon Age, where Dragon Age Inquisition, where there's a trans character, and your character can actually say not nice comments about them. So it's not a great thing, but it feels very real.
I say it feels more, yeah, it's, again, narratively, there's an element in there, and it feels like, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I know there's enough hate crime in the world already, but I think it's important that we display it in games. There's another character in Dragon Age Inquisition who is a gay male character, and his whole romance arc features around the fact that he is gay.
Okay.
So he'll flirt with anyone. He's a massive flirt, and you can even flirt with him as a female character, which I like, because in reality, like, Jamie is a gay man.
Hello.
I could flirt with Jamie for my heart's content, and it's never going to go anywhere, but it's one of those things where, like, there's nothing to stop me flirting.
No.
So in the game, it's
other
nice.
Other than HR.
Oh, yeah.
Well. Oh, HR. <Yeah.
laughs> No, they're always getting in the way.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, that sounds awful out of context. But,
it's fine, I'm going to clip it out and literally use it out of context.
Yeah. It makes more sense when we realise that me and Jamie know each other very well.
Yeah, exactly.
But the idea of like, where was I going with this? This idea that your sexuality can be judged and can be prevented, and you get to flirt with anyone, but they don't always flirt back.
Yeah.
And I really like that. So with player sexual characters, this sort of idea that the NPC is always attracted to your player character regardless of gender, it's nice because you get to fulfill that fantasy. Of just dating whatever NPC you want. I mean, it's a role-playing game. There shouldn't always be boundaries.
Yeah.
But then there's also this nice idea when games aren't player sexual, and so there's a bit of reality there. So with Dorian in Inquisition, sure, you can flirt with him, but you're not a man, and that's that. He's not interested.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to have those barriers there. It's also really important, like, to make gay characters have gay stories.
Yeah.
So like, he's a great one in that the reason in a fictional world why being gay would matter is that it means that he can't create an heir for his family.
Okay.
And so they don't like him is the sort of gist of it. And so when you explore that, it kind of tells us more about his character, and it kind of falls back into that thing about looking at sex and sexuality for a narrative.
Also explains there's a reason for it outside of what you often get in games, which is sort of pseudo real life values getting projected into games with no real background or context.
Yeah, like here's your character, there you go.
Yeah.
Happy now.
A lot of prejudice against queer people in the real world is from the British Empire, which took a lot of sort of hardline Christianity values across the world and spread them as gospel. Which is why you get a lot of hardline sort of, obviously not representative of all Christian people, but you get a lot of homophobia. And a lot of the times that would be found in games, but in Dorian's case, the character we've just been talking about, they provide a in-game reason for some, like, a reflection of homophobia, but not real-world homophobia. Because it's not, we don't like him because he's gay, it's we don't like him because he can't produce an heir. Right, there's an actual reason for it. I just wanted to very quickly ask you. I know we're probably short on time. No, we're doing great. Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
What is time? It is not a construct.
It is a podcast. We can make it longer. I was going to ask you, Kirsty, as a developer, just with like looking at game characters, because you're a concept artist,
mm-hmm.
and you do characters as well as environments. You do the whole range, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
In terms of like how we design characters, do you think more inclusion of sex in game has changed how we've designed characters over the years?
I would say yes. There's obviously a big thing at the moment where characters who are women are getting sort of pulled apart, because ever since Horizon Zero Dawn, they made the character Aloy have what a lot of people perceive to be masculine features. She just has a slightly stronger jawline, which I, as a female-born person, have, and lots of female-identifying people have. It's just a jawline. And so there's this sort of idea that there's an overhaul of masculine detail being put into characters, which just isn't the case. We're just trying to make them look more human. But prior to that, there was definitely a way that characters looked. So in Dragon Age 2, the character of Cassandra was supposed to be a bisexual character originally written, and she presents as having really short hair, which would sort of make her look a bit more masculine. She wears big armor, she has very little makeup, and she's quite tough. And then they decided, actually, in Dragon Age Inquisition, she's a romance option, she has a sex scene, she's not for women, we're going to cut that out. For whatever reason, they decided to cut it. And so she became a straight woman, which I think is a really nice drift away from stereotypes, because it's not often we see this big, muscular woman with short hair who is just straight.
I was actually going to ask, did they then... grow her hair? Did they do anything to the character to?
No, so she's kept is quite masculine looking, but then and she is still a warrior, so she has a sword and shield, she wears heavy armor, but then she does also have more traditionally feminine traits in that she reads romance novels, and so her romance is a very sort of, it's a sort of old-fashioned like knights and lovers romance, but she's also, I think, the only female character in Dragon Age Inquisition who has a topless scene.
Okay.
So you get to see her breasts in the game when you do her sex scene. It's kind of a fade to black, and then afterwards you wake up together and she's topless.
Yeah.
And traditionally, either if you're, I was going to say if you're a female character, but there isn't one, so it's just a male character, he has like the little, like the cloth all the way up to, like the blanket up to past his waist.
The,
so
the L-shaped sheet, which it used to be in Hollywood movies.
Yeah, that exact one.
Mm, the dignity blanket.
Just that special sheet, and there's always a second sheet because someone needs to leave the bed.
Oh yeah, it's just conveniently placed when the angle turns.
Oh, absolutely. There's always multiple sheets involved.
But that's exactly what it is, and I think it's good because we've used that so much that as a sort of society we recognise, oh, they've just slept together because they're naked with only the sheet in the way. But yeah, it's nice to see that character who's quite sort of identifies with a lot of masculine considered traits, but she's just very much a woman. She's a straight woman. She falls in love with your big sort of hero character, and then she sleeps with them, and she has like a very sort of feminine body underneath all that big armor. And then she goes back straight after to wearing all her armor and running around with her sword and being very like aggressive and strong. And it's nice to have that depicted.
Yeah.
Like, to have that like duality. Not duality, but you know, I'm like facets. Facets to a person where you're
they
not going.
They do a similar thing in Mass Effect as well. In the final sequence of Mass Effect 3, if you're in a romance with a character, they come and visit you in your cabin, and you can see outside that you're in hyperspace going towards Earth to go and save it with the big fleet you've built, and it's just you and your partner just laying in beds, and you're chatting, and they chat to you, and it's just this moment where two video game characters who for the most part have been used as like, oh, these are your characters, go do cool stuff, go do really cool things, are just humanized in a really nice way. It's like, yeah, the video game characters, you've been playing them, but they're also the representations of people. Like they're living a life, and like sex is one of the many faucets of their life that you get to explore, and having that kind of adds to the story because you get this really tender moment, and it really helps with things like narrative game pacing. You get this really tender moment before what is essentially 3 to 4 hours of hell, absolute hell.
I was going to say, surely you care about them more.
Yes.
You do.
At that point, because they've had this connection and you've shared in it.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a character like Garrus Vakarian. He's a straight option, so if you play a female character, you can romance him. He's your best friend in Mass Effect 1. He's your potential lover in Mass Effect 2, and then by Mass Effect 3, you are head over heels for each other. And when you're in bed at the end, it's heartbreaking, because regardless of your romance option, if you bring them with you on the final mission, again, spoilers, they get shot, so they don't die, but they can't go with you any further. And you get a goodbye scene with them. And at that point, after having the romance and the ship and then this, I always cry.
I did it with Caden. I was bawling.
He says something, Garrus says something like, because there's a line much, much earlier, I think in the second game, when you go on a suicide mission at the end, is what the last mission's called. He says, maybe we'll have a drink at the bar up in whatever heaven exists. And then he also has a line where he mentions that when it's all over, they could adopt a bunch of Krogan alien babies. And so one of the last things he says to you is something like, if we make it through this, maybe we'll adopt those Krogan babies. And if we don't, I'll save you a drink at the bar. And just those callbacks.
Shatters
I've got
me.
Goosebumps
Shatters
right
me
now.
Every time.
I'm just, oh, it's heartbreaking. But there is something I wanted to sort of jump on when you mentioned Mass Effect. if you don't romance anyone throughout any of the games, Anderson, who is like your sort of father figure, at least if you're a female shepherd, I don't know about male shepherd.
Yeah, father figure, still.
But he says this to a female shepherd right at the very end, because there's a scene where it's you and him at the end. And he says, if you haven't romanced anyone, I think you would have made a great mother one day or something like that. Like he basically tells you that you would have been an amazing family figure and you could have had an amazing life and he's proud of you and stuff. But it's just nice that even if you don't romance anyone, he still has something to say about your love life, about how maybe one day you could have if you wanted to. And that kind of made me think about the idea of, we've talked about sex in video games, but there's also the very fun lack of sex in video games. Like, considering consent, there's this idea that you get to choose who you have sex with a lot of the time. Unless it's a narratively driven game, if it's a role-playing game, you get to decide if you're having any sex. Like, my partner, when we ever play a role-playing game, I'm all about romance, so I'll start flirting with everyone. I'm like, let's see who the one is. But he says, I've got a world to save, I don't have time for romance. And then he never romances anyone. So he avoids it.
Clearly hasn't saved the world, because
yeah,
getting your kicks off is part of saving the world. Yeah. I know this from every game I've played.
Every single game.
Every single game I've played involves, you know, a quick kiss before the end of the world.
Yeah, that's how I do it. I'm always like, I want to have like someone worth saving the
yeah,
world for.
Like, yeah.
But apparently, for some people, just saving the world's enough. You don't need that love story. And I've always found that interesting, because in a lot of games, even Baldur's Gate, which I think is great for inclusivity and stuff, even if you, and again, you have consent, so you can deny everyone, but if you're playing as a sort of asexual person or aromantic person, or if you're just not interested, you'll still find the characters are hitting on you and you're having to knock them back. And it's like, we've got a world to save. Yes, I gave you a pair of magic shoes, but stop trying to run away with me.
Stop trying to thank me like
yeah.
that.
It was like, Gale is a very interesting one in that when he flirts with you, he's not necessarily transparent about it. So he says something and perhaps it's a bit of naivety or again, that media literacy. But I was watching my partner play, and he's a sort of bi-curious but overall straight male. So he was playing and he was talking to Gale in-game, and Gale said, oh, I'll take you to the woods and maybe we could have some magic together. And he was like, oh, you're going to take me and show me magic in the woods? And I'm just like, oh, oh no.
In fairness, everything Gale says sounds like a man attempting to be like, do you want to come and see my train set? Like, he's that way about magic. And I, that's why I found him, I think I referred to him as sort of a wet wipe in the last episode of this.
Back when,
and I stand by that. Because I don't know what it was still, it was cute, but it was, oh God, no, it's just like I'm talking about an ex now. Let's not do that podcast. Oh.
That's another podcast.
Ooh.
Right. I'm trying to find a takeaway from this, and I don't know what you guys think, but part of the takeaway is that as long as there's a narrative purpose that you can get behind.
That's kind of my rule behind it.
Works.
I'm not going to speak for Kirsty, but like I've always preferred sex and relationships and anything to do with a game to be part of the whole experience. So we just talked about it there where myself and Kirsty both prefer to have some more kind of like grounding in the world, like a romantic partner,
someone to save
yeah. or like I when I go into a game like Mass Effect, Baldur's Gate, Dragon Age, I want to be part of that world. Every time I go and play those games, I always end up being an elf mage, because that's how I feel like I'd be in that world. Like, I'm a bit of an outcast, a bit of a weirdo, and I like weird stuff, which is exactly what magic would be in those worlds. And then I like romancing characters, because I'm quite the romantic. I like going on dates and things like that. Haven't in a while, if anyone's listening.
Obviously you're contacting us. That's a whole new avenue for me.
But like, I like making that my world. I like making like my character wear the clothes and the weapons I like, and being part of that world, and it makes it more for me. So yes, sex as part of that I think is fine, because it gives me another thing to latch onto in there. Because in real life as well, I have some relation with sex. I'm not going to say a massive sweeping statement about what I like about sex on a podcast, but
everyone
there are parts
has
of it that I have some kind of
it.
Relationship
yeah.
with sex, and I can reflect that in some games, yeah. and then I can have that kind of partnership that I want to see, and that can form part of my enjoyment of the game. Has this caused a real life effect on my real life dating because the people I'm dating aren't wizards? Yes. This is why I'm single. If there's any men out there who happen to be wizards. My contact details are available on the Staffs Uni website. But until that happens, that's what I get out of games. I get my fantasy. So sex is part of that.
Yeah.
I would agree. I'm a massive romantic as well. And I definitely like this idea of falling in love with every sort of fictional character I come across. And for some characters, that's done better than others, so you kind of like lean towards them. I think it's also important to briefly touch on Astarion in Baldur's Gate, who is a character who has a lot of sex but uses sex as a tool, and is also a victim of sort of sexual assault in a way. And I think it's not necessarily fair to mention sex without mentioning that it's often used in video games derogatively. There's obviously a lot of sexual assault in video games, especially video games that depict war will depict sexual assault, and it's the same with every media. Like Game of Thrones was well known for it, and there's games like God of War and Dante's Inferno that do stuff like that, that's very violent, and for me those type of narrative driven sex scenes are important but not enjoyable. And I think it's interesting where and how sex is used. I guess my sort of overall takeaway is that sex in media is really important at sort of directing scenes and telling us stuff. And it's a tool that should be utilised, but always sort of with caution. And it only really works well when it's done by the right people, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I think that's fabulous. I think that's... You've summed it up. I couldn't have hoped for better of a summing up. Thank you both. Like, again, still going through my head is the song, Let's Talk About Sex.
Don't make me sing it.
Maybe we'll. But thank you so much for... Because, again, it's that idea of what you put of yourself into a game and what the game gives you the opportunity to do and explore. And it's, again, it's that kind of idea of being seen, not being seen, becoming the person you want to be, not becoming the person, you know, exploring these different things. And I think it's super important and it's super interesting. Thank you so much, both.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
That's Game Changers. Thanks. Bye.